LA has the largest jail system in the country.
You got people that have been in jail just like one time in their life, can't get nothing because of whatever mistake they made.
I stole some ground turkey because I wanted to feed my family. We was hungry.
Off the Block, stories tracing the path from city block to cell block and back. Available September 13th at kcrw.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
From KCRW, this is Here Be Monsters.
I'm worried that if I tell you what you're hearing right now, you'll turn off this episode or cringe unnecessarily. I'm worried that you won't hear it for what it is. What it is an intricate sound. A meticulous sound. A sound that isn't fragile, just quiet. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you'll hear this sound like I do. But I don't want to risk it this early in the episode. So before we get into all the talking and explaining, just enjoy this sound as it is for a little while longer. Chris?
Yeah.
Hey, nice to meet you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah?
Yeah? There's a variety of things in here right now. And in preparation for you, I put in a couple owl skulls just so that they would, you could see them sort of starting onto things. There's one under there. These ones don't like fur feathers very much, and they like skin and jerky, like meat, dried muscle. They like it dried more than wet, and they will eat the wet stuff as well, but tends to make the preparation not quite as good because it gets all soupy and gross. Yeah.
So see, is that a larva? Or
yeah, that's a larva, one of the larvae. So the larvae go through various stages.
Do they have many legs?
They have six legs at the front, just like that, okay, but they're covered with hairs.
Can you pick one up?
Oh, yeah, for sure. You want an adult or a...
Sure, yeah.
So this is an adult. It's just under probably a centimeter. Dermestes maculata. You can see the silvery parts. Those are tiny little hairs on them. He's trying to pull away from me right now, and he's got those little clubbed antenna. Oop, drop him.
Oh, is that one done?
No, he's fine.
Oh, he's fine. He? She?
Let's see. It looks like a he to me. So you see there's sort of fuzz on the down the center of those segments on his abdomen. That's males have those.
Huh. Chris, no offense, but I'm breathing through my mouth right now.
Yeah, it smells pretty high.
What does it
pretty
smell
high.
Like?
I just say it smells like beetles because, I don't know, it's its own distinct smell. Like, insects just have a insect smell to them. I don't know how else to explain it, but... It's sort of a musty, rotting book kind of smell mixed in with decaying animal. I don't know. Once I'm working in here, obviously you get nose blind to it after a little while, but I still smell it. I just ignore it. That's all.
How many beetles do you reckon is in this?
I don't know. Probably 20,000 plus beetles in there. They're just crawling all over everything in the beetle tank, looking for food, looking for mates, looking... for new food sources. You have to actually watch them to make sure they don't start eating the bones.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're pretty voracious.
Huh. Can I hold it?
Yeah,
is that a bad idea?
He's just gonna crawl all over you.
Flesh-eating beetle here.
Here Be Monsters, the podcast about
tiny little jaws.
The podcast about
the unknown.
No. No.
Okay, I'm Christopher Stinson. I'm a curatorial assistant at the Beattie Biodiversity Museum at the University of British Columbia. I'm in charge of mammals, reptiles, and amphibians.
What you called tetrapods earlier.
Well, part of the tetrapods. My boss is in charge of the birds, so. Yeah.
So what I was curious about, why I contacted you, is because you, like every other natural history museum that I know of, has a collection of dermistid beetles, right?
Yeah, we have three small colonies of Dermestes maculatus, the hide beetle, that we use as sort of museum volunteers, is what they like to call it, to clean skeletons and skulls of the flesh so we can make good specimens out of them.
So you get a specimen from any source, you get it, what happens next?
It's in the freezer, so we thought we skin it out, you leave the bones of the feet in there, take the skull and tail and the rest of the main skeleton out, then you stuff the skin. You rough out the skeleton, remove the brain, the big muscle groups, all the internal organs and things. So you rough it out and let it dry overnight. Then that gets bundled up, labeled. It goes in there. You put paper towels over it, and the beetles just surge all over it. For instance, like a squirrel-sized animal, it can be within 24 hours, and it's totally cleaned.
Isn't there a better way to do this?
This is the most hands-off way. The dermestids, they do all the work for you, essentially. Whereas if there's any other way, you'd have to go through the whole roughing out process and then put something in cold water so it essentially just rots in water. And then you have to worry about the smell. I know you said the beetle smell too, but you have no idea what a rotting skull smells like in a vat of water. Whereas this, the cleaning, the initial cleaning is way easier when you have somebody else with a tiny little jaws do it for you.
What's the natural distribution of Dermestidae?
Dermestidae is pretty much found everywhere but Antarctica. They've moved around with humans, so in some cases it's sort of unclear where they first came from because everything eventually dies. So they have a food source pretty much everywhere. They essentially get rid of the waste that's out produced in the world. Not only Dermestids, but there's tons of carrion beetles and the maggots and things that eat dead things. If we didn't have that, we'd just be piled up in dead things all over the place. That's why you don't see dead birds absolutely everywhere or dead mammals, because these types of critters just devour them away and get rid of them.
Actually, yeah, that is something I'm kind of curious about. Like, if something goes out and dies in the woods, what happens?
Depending on circumstances, I can go for sort of a general idea. So it dies, and then you have various bacteria going to work on it that immediately starts rotting it, and various insects and arthropods will come and eat them, and there's sort of a succession of things that eat them. So maybe some sort of blowfly maggots will come because they'll lay things like right away. Within minutes of death, they'll find it, lay eggs. Then you can have things like dermestids coming in to eat the dried out skin and the flesh itself. And so then you'll also get like rodents and gnawing animals and coming and chewing on the bones themselves to get minerals that they lack in their normal diet. So like porcupines or something will come and chew on bones. And then slowly over time, everything, all the bones just get dissolved and it breaks down with the natural environment, like just water and natural rot and things. And then eventually everything's gone. It basically becomes its own little successional ecosystem when something dies.
Successional ecosystem is a term that I like, but I haven't ever heard before.
I sort of made it up.
Yeah. So it's interesting. It sounds like the dermistids are kind of the finishers of the skeleton.
Yes, they would. In a dry environment, they would come and clean it up. But you got to remember, out in the wild, they don't have it on a platter to themselves. Like, we have a single species in a colony that we continually feed something, and because they clean the bones really well.
It just seems like it surprised me when I learned that in 2016, the way museums prepare their specimens is to just throw them in a beetle cage. I guess you work with that every day, so it must not be surprising.
It is kind of weird. Like, you'd think there'd be some amazing technological advance with lasers or something that you could just like laser scan it through and it would eliminate all the meat or some awesome thing like that. But it's sort of on the fringe of normal society, but it's the best way. You can just leave it. and it's self-perpetuating as long as you keep feeding it. It's a fairly straightforward process, and the way I like to look at it is that these things have evolved for millions of years. They do a job quite well, so why not use them to do it rather than try to reinvent the wheel?
It's probably nice that you don't have to pay them, too.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. We pay them in meat.
I tried paying an intern in beef jerky once, and it went terribly.
Maybe you just didn't have the right flavor. Honey garlic or something would be better.
Is that flavor? Is it morbid or is it dark to be fascinated by these things?
There's a little bit of a sort of morbid side to it. I don't know about dark. Death happens to everything. It's a fact of life. Like, we're not going to get around it. And the fact is that these dead animals that we put through the beetle colony and become specimens and will last for the next 500 years, I hope I'm contributing something to our understanding. I try not to look at it as a sort of a morbid thing. Yes, there's death, but that happens everywhere. And just because I'm sort of hands-on on it, I don't think that it makes it me morbid or anything.
Do you think that dermisid beetles are going to be used for the foreseeable future? Or is there something that is coming along that might make them obsolete?
Nothing that I know of. I don't see anything on the horizon that would change this, really. But you never know.
Do you like these beetles?
I think they're cute, yeah. I think they're fun. They're quite finicky, actually. I talk to them on occasion because you'll put something in there and they won't have any interest in it whatsoever. For instance, I had an alligator. They just wouldn't eat it at first. Put it in the freezer, and then a few months later, I took it back out of the freezer, put it back in, and it was game time. They just ate everything off the bones within a week. And it's just, they're finicky. They go in cycles, but it's neat to have this sort of little ecosystem, a very simple one, albeit. And it's neat to have these little volunteers because I wouldn't want to do it myself.
I just don't want this to go by. You said you talk to them?
I say things like, why aren't you eating this? Or what's going on here? Or oh no. Or it's like, come on, guys, what are you doing?
Has one of them ever said anything back to you?
Not that I'm aware of.
When I've explained this to people, there's usually a variety of reactions to it. Some people are like, oh, that's great. That's interesting. I didn't know that. And some people are like, that is disgusting. Why do you think some people cringe at the idea of flesh-eating beetles?
I just think, well, this is kind of creepy, actually, when you think about it. Our society sort of reviles insects in general. And the idea of them eating dead flesh harkens to your mortality and that sort of thing, and it's just a knee-jerk reaction to beetles, and then when you associate it with something that's dead, it's even more so, more revulsion can come from that.
So for people who are repulsed by the idea of flesh-eating bugs or dead things, are they missing out on something?
In my opinion, yeah. I think that every time you are revolted by something like that, you are missing out. There's just so much variety of life out there, and I just really believe that if you just took the time to look at it and see it for what it really is, that your life is richer for it, and it would just take a look at the beetles and see what they're doing. Even when we go back and go back there for you to take pictures and look at that owl skull that we were looking at before, it'll probably be much more reduced in flesh than it was an hour ago. So you can see all stages of the life cycle of them. There's eggs in there, tiny larvae which are mere millimeters long, all the way up to like the centimeter and a half full-sized larvae. Then the adults, there's pupa, there's the patterns that they chew into the substrate in there. And I'm not saying that I sit there and meditate to it or anything like that, but you can go check on it on a daily basis, and there's just, I don't know, it's interesting to me. I've always found it interesting.
You want to go take some pictures?
Yeah, sure.
If you ever find yourself on the campus of the University of British Columbia in Vancouver, be sure to stop by the Beattie Biodiversity Museum. There, you can see many pristine skeletons that have been cleaned by tens of thousands of tiny mouths. You won't regret the trip. The museum's website is beattiemuseum.ubc.ca. Chris Stinson is the curatorial assistant of mammals, reptiles, and amphibians at the museum. While we were talking, he told me not to worry about handling the beetles, because Dermestes maculatus only feed on dead flesh, except for wild turkeys. For some reason, they'll eat a live wild turkey. We have a link to that research on our website, hbmpodcast.com. Also on our website, we have photos of beetle-cleaned skeletons and a picture of Chris standing in front of a wall of taxidermied birds. But most of all, we have pictures of the beetles eating the flesh off of the skull of a dead owl. Our website is hbmpodcast.com. This episode of Here Be Monsters was produced by me, Jeff Entman, along with help from Bethany Denton and Nick White. Music from The Black Spot. Here Be Monsters is a part of KCRW's Independent Producer Project. And on this episode, we want to wish a long overdue happy birthday to Paul. Paul, we don't actually know when your birthday is, but we hope it's a good one this year and every other. Happy birthday, Paul. Thanks for listening. More episodes soon.